Morning, Council. Is that Council as well, or is that? Okay, then, usually we just have Council at the Council table. Yep, not a problem. Unless we are glad you are here. Good morning, Council. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Please be seated. Today is Thursday, July 6, 2023. We have three cases on our oral calendar for today. This is the third of them, A22-1830, Freedom Kirkula, and my apologies if I'm mispronouncing the last name. As trustee for the next of kin of Grace Elizabeth Betty, appellant versus City of Moorhead et al. Counsel for appellant, you will have 15 minutes for your initial arguments, followed by 15 minutes by respondent, and 5 minutes for rebuttal by appellant if you so choose. We have a podium you can lower and raise it. There's a button underneath there, and you can also adjust the microphone itself. When you approach the podium, please state your name for the record and the party that you are representing. And with that, counsel for appellant, you may begin.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honor. Counselor, may it please the court. My name is Tony Schrank, and I have the honor of representing Freedom Kirkula on behalf of her minor daughter, Grace Betty. Ms. Kirkula is the trustee for the next of kin of Grace Betty. Grace drowned in an artificial pond built and maintained by the DNR. That pond, unfortunately, contained a hidden danger. That hidden danger has been described by DNR employees as one where a 4'6" child took one single step and would find herself completely submerged in water. The district court failed to view the evidence in a light most favorable to the non-moving party, Grace's mother, Freedom Kirkula. Viewed in that light, there are clear jury questions concerning the pond's hidden artificial danger and the adequacy of the DNR warning of those dangers. The district court's grant of summary judgment should be reversed. This court has already seen this case. This court has already been at the appellate level, and the Court of Appeals provided a roadmap for what Ms. Kirkula needed to find in evidence in order to find DNR liable. The DNR is liable if it failed to take reasonable care to warn visitors of hidden artificial conditions created by the DNR that pose a risk of serious bodily harm or death. Specifically, it's the adult trespasser exception to recreational immunity. Ms. Kirkula has done that. This pond was a bowl-shaped pond with 8 feet deep of water. After this incident, unfortunately, a DNR employee, Paula Como, told police in an interview that there was a sudden drop-off in this pond.
Is that part of the record before us on appeal?
It is, Your Honor.
Where is that in the record?
It's in exhibits to depositions in the record where the exact interview is included.
Where is that exactly? Because I was having trouble locating that in the record.
And I also asked her in her deposition. I asked her if she told the visitors of the pond whether or not there's a drop-off in this safety talk that she gave, as she had implied to the police after the incident. But in her deposition, she said that she actually did not warn of a drop-off because no drop-off exists.
Right, which is contrary to, and that's a sworn statement that we have that is in the record. But I'm struggling with whether or not the statement of the drop-off that was given to the police, whether or not that's actually part of the record that is before us, because if it's not, then
I
think the drop-off is one of the key issues here.
You're right, Judge. Whether or not there's a drop-off is the exact issue in this case. There's other deposition testimony from Brian Nelson, a park employee, that said the hidden drop-off was a hazard that the group should have been warned of. And Brian Nelson wouldn't say that this pond was gradual. You know, their whole case has been, well, it's a gradual slope.
Well, but that's a different statement than saying that there is a drop-off.
Yeah, Your Honor, and Mr. Nelson also was the one that testified that said if a 4'6" child wouldn't take one step, they would find themselves in 1 foot different depth of water. And we can, you know, the DNR tries to say that we're arguing verbiage. They can call it whatever they want. But the issue is whether or not there was a hidden danger. And that hidden danger was a sudden drop-off in a pond concealed by murky water. So we call it a drop-off just because that's what we deem it being. But the actual danger was this drop-off where a small child could then suddenly find herself in a foot deeper of water.
And right, but we have the Johnson case. It's, you know, very, very similar case here. And, you know, unless there's, you know, evidence in the record of the drop-off, then how is this case different than the Johnson case?
It's different than the Johnson case because in the Johnson case, there was no evidence of a drop-off. If there was evidence in a drop-off in the Johnson case, it may have been dealt with differently. The Johnson court even goes as far to state that the court specifically noted the bottom slopes from very shallow to 6 feet deep in the middle with no sudden drop-offs. That's different than this case, Your Honor. This case, there's evidence in the record that there was a drop-off or that there was a hidden danger where there would be a decrease in an increase in depth that was not visible to the child or to the swimmer. So that's why this case is different than Johnson. It's different than the Zacharias case and the Brudvik case because those cases do not include any evidence of drop-offs. And they all state that in the opinion or in the orders. They say it was a gradual decrease. So the DNR and depositions try to keep saying it was a gradual decrease. However, there's plenty of evidence that shows there was a drop-off.
And what specifically is that evidence that is in the record?
Yep. The design of this pond in deposition testimony of Erica Rivers, it went from 4 to 5 feet deep in 5 feet of distance. That was one position. They never surveyed this pond after it was designed. It was designed in 2001, and then the incident happened in 2018. They didn't really actually know the specific depths anywhere in the pond, and that's why all the warnings are inadequate. But the drop-off, the evidence of the drop-off.
We did have ropes and we did have buoys for the deeper part of the water, right?
So the buoyed off areas in this pond, it was one large, I call it a rectangle. And then in that rectangle, there was a buoy line that went in the middle of it. And it created two spaces, essentially kind of two squares. And one had a rounded edge. One of those squares was 3 to 4 feet deep. One of those squares was 5 to 8 feet deep, according to deposition testimony. Now, there's also a lot of other deposition testimony where they can't actually give specific depths of the pond. But going back to what the design was or what they thought those buoyed off areas were, one was 3 to 4 feet deep, one was 5 to 8 feet deep. Well, a child who's walking through one that's 3 to 4 feet deep, that the exact same buoy lines, whether or not those buoys are reasonable is a question for a jury to determine. Because they say stay away from the buoys, but then the child that goes in the buoy 3 to 4 feet is fine, and they go to the 5 to 8 feet, they completely experience a different slope on that side.
So you indicated the design of the pond was one of the issues that creates an issue for the jury with respect to the drop-off. What else is in there in the record to show that there was a drop-off?
Ms. Como's statement to the police that says...
Other than that, we already talked about that.
Mr. Nelson's deposition testimony where he says, I would not call the slope gradual. Rather, it was a hazard that should have been warned of. And then he was the individual that went on to say, I asked him, well, if a 4'6" child took one step at the most drastic decline, what type of change in depth would that child experience? And he said about a foot or so. And then he walked back that statement. But there's so much evidence in this case that shows there's a drop-off, and the DNR walks it back. Ms. Como in her police interview says there's a steep drop-off, but then in her deposition she says there is no drop-off and never warned of it. Well, that's a question for a jury to consider what was true, the original statements or the deposition statements, whether or not Mr. Nelson was correct when he said that a child took one single step and find herself in a foot deeper of water. That's a question of fact for a jury to consider whether that was true. It's our position that if that child took one step and found herself in a foot deeper of water, that's a hidden danger. A hidden danger under Henry, that's a trap. That's a concealment.
May I ask, because, you know, in the terrible tragedy of the child's loss, I totally appreciate and I'm so sorry about, but the legal question we're here to resolve is the adult trespasser standard. And if we look at an adult so it doesn't relate to there being, you know, use by children of this pool. It relates to if an adult trespassed onto this property, was there a hidden danger of a sudden drop-off that that person was not warned of. And so I don't know what the, when you're talking about the heights, et cetera, we should get in our mindset, apart from this case of an adult who's coming to the place, and they see buoyed off, roped off area of the pond, they see topographical maps on the lifeguard stands. I think we can take into account the fact of actual verbal warning by the, or oral warning by the property owner in a trespass, imaginary trespass case. Why is there still, and I don't know if there's evidence in the record that actually unmurky water gives depth perception of, you know, whether one has depth perception in clear water. But given what is there, how could it survive a claim as to an adult trespasser? How is that adult trespasser not warned?
Because the hidden danger was a drop off in depth that they couldn't see. The DNR denies that exists. How could they deny that exists, yet at the same time say that they warned the swimmers, adult or child?
Doesn't seem, I mean, it certainly got deeper and over, you know, 8 feet deep. So that's a warning that, you know, and then it doesn't seem to me disputed that it get it becomes steeper at the point of, it doesn't go down like 1 foot, or it doesn't go from 5 feet to 8 foot like a pool does, but it does seem to be that it gets toward the deep end, the incline gets steeper, right? I guess I don't know what that steeper is, you know, actually in terms of grade. You know, it doesn't, like you're talking about that there's a testimony that someone 4 foot six, if they go a foot, would be over their head. So I guess that means it would now be 5 foot six. I'm not sure, or more. I'm not sure what that grade is and how that's a drop off as opposed to a steep incline and how that matters to it all.
The adult trespasser exception applies to this case because even if it was an adult who was swimming in this pond, if they had experienced this hidden drop off and weren't able to swim, it is a fatal condition in this pond, one that they did not warn of. It's one that existed that they didn't warn of. The Henry, and that's the question of fact, is was there a drop-off that was a hidden danger? And if so, then they should have warned of it. The trial court just completely glossed over that fact and found in the order that there was no hidden drop-off.
Well, so what does a drop-off mean with respect to an adult trespasser, that with one step they'd be over their head?
I would imagine a drop-off for an adult could be the same exact hazard that it is for a child, because if a child can't swim and an adult can't swim and they're the same height, it's the same exact condition to them. It's the same exact hazard. Looking at this map and the map...
I mean, does it come down to one step? Obviously, if it went down to 8 feet at a constant grade, you would not have a drop-off, right? It still would be over a swimmer's head, but it would be at a constant grade. The problem that you're relying on is that it became, the grade changed, right?
Yes, Your Honor, and that's the fact question, is was this a danger to a swimmer? Was it a hidden danger? And that's why this case needs to go to a jury to determine that fact question. Was there a hidden danger in this pond?
I guess what I would like you to address, counsel, is the testimony that you think best proves, you know, again, viewed favorably to your side to deny summary judgment, that the change in the slope of the pond was unexpected. I'd like to use that word, if you don't mind, instead of drop-off, since I'm not real clear what makes something a drop-off.
Yeah, and again, we're arguing drop-off, but the condition that we're talking about is, it's more about the dangerous condition. And what that dangerous condition is a change, a sudden change in depth that the swimmer can't see.
What evidence do you have of that? That it's a sudden change?
Yeah, that a 4'6" child could take a single step and experience up to a foot deep of water.
It's Mr. Nelson's testimony.
Okay.
Any other testimony?
Yes, also Erica Rivers, where she says that it went from 4 to 5 feet deep and 5 foot of distance in certain areas. And Mr. Nelson's testimony, it says he wouldn't call...
5 feet...
In to, 5 feet.
To what? Just that one?
Yep.
The shift from 4 to 5 feet cut ultimately goes to 8, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
So four to five feet over what distance?
Five distance.
Five
feet of distance.
Five foot distance.
Over 5 feet. And that Rivers says that that is sudden or unexpected?
No, she says
it's just a description of the
design,
right?
Design.
Okay.
Yep.
That's the piece I'm looking for, is evidence to say that that type of a drop-off, a one-foot decline over a distance, apparently of 5 feet, is sudden or unexpected.
Yeah, and I think that that is also the question for the jury, is was this...
Well, but I think you have to have some evidence, don't you, to give the jury
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And we do. It's that Nelson's deposition testimony, Como's deposition testimony, where she walks back her statement from the police, and also Nelson's deposition testimony, where he says that it actually, he would not say, I said, well, would you just call it a gradual slope? And he says, no, I wouldn't call it a gradual slope. And then he goes on to say that a 4'6" child could take one step and find herself in up to a foot different depth. And then he walked that back as well. And then their own map on the buoy lines inside the map. It's a map that has shaded areas, and those shaded areas represent a different change in depth. Well, if you look at the actual map that's in the briefs, it's unbelievable how there's a 7-foot gray area, which indicates 7 feet of depth, right at the buoy line. So that means that looking at that map, a child who's on this side of the buoy line is in shallow water, we'll call it. But then as soon as they go over on the other side of the buoy line, that's 7 feet of water.
And why is that not adequate warning to a trespasser when there's an actual topographical map that shows a change in depth marked by lines?
And, Your Honor, the red light is blinking, but I'll continue if allowed, please.
Yes, briefly.
Because the DNR didn't actually know admittedly, those depths on the sign were not accurate. They said that those depths on this sign were not accurate. What type of a reasonable warning provides false information in that actual warning when it comes in to deal with a fatal depth of a water? The reason why they say it's not accurate would be argued to a jury is because it shows a significant drop-off from the water, from the shallow line to the deep line. And now they try to walk that back as well, saying, oh, those weren't accurate. So they can't have it both ways. They can't say that warning sign was accurate and that was a sufficient warning, but there was no drop-offs. Because if that warning sign was accurate and a correct warning, then there would have been a significant drop-off via that sign itself, the proof of that sign itself. They also...
And you have 5 minutes for rebuttal as well.
Thank you, Judge.
Thank you, Counsel. Counsel for appellant, or respondent, I'm sorry, you have 15 minutes. Please be mindful of the clock that is there as well. And please say your name for the record and the party you are representing. You may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Mike Goodwin, and I represent the DNR in this matter. The discussion this morning and in the briefs has centered a lot on the contours of the pond. But there are at least three reasons why the court should affirm summary judgment that are independent of the plaintiff's characterization of the pond. The first is that the change in depth was not hidden. The second is that DNR had no reason to know that there was a dangerous condition in this pond, given the lack of similar incidents of deep water drownings in the record. And third, it is undisputed that DNR warned of the change in the pond's depth. Each of these...
I want to ask you about the first one. You say that the change in depth was not hidden, but isn't the record fairly clear? That might not be the best choice of words, but it was murky. And it could become very murky when you've got swimmers, and there are many swimmers there at the time. So it seems like the record is fairly straightforward, shall we say, that the water was indeed murky, right?
Your Honor, I'm not sure that the characterization of the murkiness of the water really gets us anywhere, though.
Well, I think that goes to whether or not if there is a danger, whether it's hidden.
I think for purposes of summary judgment, the court can assume that the water was murky.
Okay.
I think where the hidden danger, that's where we come to the ropes and the buoys and the signage. There's no dispute that those buoys and the ropes showed where the water got deeper. And there's no dispute that that there was a sign there and that the sign was pointed out to the children.
Sign
on that
is
day.
Where?
The sign is there. The sign is in two locations by the pool. On two lifeguard stands. There's a reproduction of that sign in the addendum, Your Honor. I forget the page.
Okay, and then going back to talking about the ropes and the buoys, mm-hmm. is there any marking on the ropes and the buoys to indicate the change in depth?
Not on the ropes and buoys themselves.
Just literally ropes and buoys, right?
It's literally ropes and buoys, but the signage shows the general contours of the pond. It's true that it doesn't show the actual depth at any given spot, but that's because it's a pond, there's evaporation, it's a sand bottom. So to be mathematically precise is impossible in a pond of this type, but it does show where the depth changes, and it shows where the buoys are, and it tells swimmers where those what those markings mean.
Maps, it tells them what the markings mean, but not the ropes and buoys themselves, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Right. The reason I'm asking this is, so if we're viewing that evidence in the light favorable to the non-moving party, the appellant, aren't they entitled to argue that's not adequate to ask a child or an adult swimmer to put A plus B together? You know, the map on the back of the lifeguard chair plus the ropes and the buoys.
I think that's where the trespasser standard comes in, Your Honor, because it's a limited duty to warn. And the warning just has to be reasonably calculated to advise users of the pond where the depth changes, and there's no dispute here. Those buoys and those ropes are fixed to the bottom of the pond. There's no dispute that they moved. There's no dispute that they didn't accurately show swimmers where that pond was or where that depth changed. I would also point out, Your Honors, it's undisputed that Ms. Como, the DNR naturalist, gave a safety talk. And although we don't have a recording of that talk in the record, pages 6 and 7 of appellant's brief show that Ms. Como pointed out the deep areas and said, you need to stay where you can touch if you are not a strong swimmer. You need to stay on the side of the pond that has the ramp. And that's on the, if you're looking at the pond from where they were, that's on the left side of the pond. So she gave them a reference point as to where the shallow water and the deep water was, and said, you need to, if you're not a strong swimmer, you need to stay where you can touch. Under the trespasser standard, that is more than an adequate warning.
And what is the depth of sort of the intermediate segment? Was that 4 to 5?
I believe in the intermediate segment. I think it's 3 to 4. I don't recall exactly offhand, but I think where you get into that center section, that's where it goes to 5.
Okay, 5 to and down to 8.
5 and that's down to 8. Correct.
So, I think getting into that part of the pond, I think your argument, just analytically, the first part is whether there's a hidden, hidden something or concealment, right? A trap or concealment, right? And if not, then you don't get to the remaining parts of it. I think you made an argument that there's not even that to start with. And there's a lot of discussion about what a drop-off means, et cetera. But why isn't a change in grade, a sudden change in grade, which does not seem to be really disputed? I'll leave off the word sudden. A change in grade at that point from the grade. Why would that not at the least be a jury question as to whether that's a concealment?
I don't think it's a jury question because it wasn't concealed. It was specifically pointed out to the swimmers, and the buoys marked where that change in depth was.
Right, but the buoys or the ropes didn't have any depth markers. So, I mean, if this is the first time you're out there, one buoy may look like another, and how do you make heads or tails of what the depths are of each area? I mean, it seems like you're asking a person to, okay, go there, look at the map, one of two locations on the lifeguard things, and then look at where the buoys are and where the ropes are and figure out, okay, this is where I can go, where I can't go. Isn't, you know, viewing the evidence in the light most favorable to appellant, isn't that a lot to ask? And isn't that, more importantly, really a jury question as to whether or not that is sufficient or not?
Your Honor, I don't think it's a lot to ask for a couple of reasons. I mean, first, these markings are similar to markings that are used in pools and bodies of water all over Minnesota, and so I don't think.
What are the markings that you told me that the buoys and ropes don't have markings on them? So you're now saying that buoys and ropes themselves are markings? I just want to be clear on our language.
Yes, Your Honor. What I'm referring to, I'm not saying that they have markings on them. I'm saying that they mark where the depth changes.
Right. I really didn't mean to interrupt because I thought Judge Reyes asked a good question. I mean, what we have are two areas, right, that are, in your language, marked or designated by ropes and buoys. One of those areas, you just told me, is 3 to 4 feet, and one is 5 to 8. So whether that is a sudden change, isn't that a question, a fact for the jury?
I don't think
those two areas aren't, you know, designated differently if you're at that location in the pond.
I think they are designated differently if you're at that location.
Okay, how?
By the rope that goes across. So you have to cross a rope to get into
the deeper. How do you know which side is which? Which side is the 3 to 4, which side is the 5 to 8?
Because
you looked at the map on the lifeguard chair back at the before the entrance, and you've remembered which one is which.
Because of the map, and because it was specifically pointed out to them which side of the pond was the deeper in the safety talk.
Okay.
That's correct.
So, you know, as you know, lots of case law in Minnesota says that when we get to adequacy of warning, that's a question of fact. And by piecing together these series of points of evidence, aren't you essentially conceding that this is a question of fact for the jury?
Not conceding that at all, Your Honor. The warnings cases, if I'm understanding which cases the courts or the court is referencing, I don't know that those deal with the trespasser standard. And under the trespasser standard, it is a limited duty to warn. And so I don't know that you under the trespasser standard of warning.
Direct me to a case under the trespasser standard that you think, because there are several, of course, that deal with ponds and drownings. I mean, it's very tragic, right? It's awful. But which is the one that you think most relies on this duty to warn as the reason, as opposed to the hidden danger?
So I think it's unpublished, Your Honor, but I think the David case against the city of St. Paul, where they where the court said, look, there's a dock, and if there's a dock, that means that the water is deep, and the hazards of drowning in deep water are well known. So in that case, there wasn't even an explicit warning, and the court did say, essentially, yes, the swimmer is required to piece it together from the context, from what that pond shows. And the David case is cited in our brief. As to the drop-off, Your Honor, I do want to talk a little bit about the contours of the pond. You know, I don't think there is any evidence of a drop-off in the record, and I think that for two reasons, Your Honor. The first is that I don't think a reasonable juror could look at the pictures at the respondent's addendum, pages 15 and 16, and conclude there is a drop-off. That makes this case just like Johnson and Zacharias.
Is there a 1 foot decline within 5 feet?
Your Honor, I do believe that is what Ms. Rivers said. I think she was doing sort of geometry on the fly, so I'm not sure how reliable that is. But I don't think that
we don't consider reliability of Ms. Rivers' testimony at this point, right? With summary judgment.
Correct. I do think she expressed some uncertainty and hesitancy to do geometry on the fly. Even if you credit that testimony and take it at face value, Your Honor, I I don't think that's a drop-off by any definition.
And what do you rely on for that? I asked the same question of opposing counsel.
Sure. I think when you use the term drop-off just in sort of a common sense way, most people think of that as sort of a cliff or a perpendicular angle. If you look, you know, this isn't a statutory construction case, but if you look at any dictionary and look up the term drop-off, I looked at a couple of them, it says a very steep or perpendicular decline, like a cliff. So I think that's what drop-off means in sort of common parlance and understanding. In terms of how they the witnesses described the slope of the pond in their police interviews, Ms. Como did say, quote, it kind of drops off. But she clarified in her sworn testimony that she did not mean like a cliff type drop off. It does get steeper toward the middle. And she was saying that in the context of what she was warning them of. Ms. Lillaby said in her police.
Is that the lifeguard?
Excuse me?
Is that the lifeguard?
Ms. Como is the naturalist.
Right,
Ms. Lillaby
no.
is the lifeguard.
Lifeguard, okay.
Ms. Lillaby, in her deposition, said that there is a drop-off of 8 feet, which there clearly is not if you look at respondents' addendum pages 15 and 16. And she clarified at pages 44 through 48 of her deposition that she was not saying that there is a cliff-like drop-off of 8 feet. She's saying there is not a drop off at all in the pond. What she's referring to in that statement is that the pond has a bottom of 8 feet.
So I think the one piece of evidence that seems to most go to this, to me at least, is the evidence cited from Mr. Nelson that if you take a 1 foot step, you would, or take a step, you'd be, it's a 1 foot difference. So that's the steepness of it. Mm-hmm. So drop off or not, if that's not been the grade, why isn't that sufficient to decide that it's a concealment?
So, Your Honor, that's not actually what Mr. Nelson said. We dealt with that at footnote 7 of our brief. And if you look at page 79 of his deposition, he actually said, you know, I don't really know. I don't really know if that's true, that if they would take a 1 foot step, they would be completely submerged. So I think the court needs to look at what Mr. Nelson actually said in his deposition.
But I guess the thing where I'm sort of struggling with this is it's not 90 degrees, obviously, because how could it be? It's a, you know, on the other hand, it's not the same grade that it was. So it's steeper in the middle. We don't know. There's not any sort of actual from anything in the record. I know the red light's on, about like what actually that means with respect to besides that, you know, like what is it, except for the 1 foot over 5 feet, which doesn't sound that steep to me, like the other statement, that's talking about the shallower part, right? When we get to the deepest part, we don't really have numbers associated. We have pictures, et cetera.
I think that's right, Your Honor. I mean, If I may, Your Honor, we and I have hesitated to sort of give a mathematical grade of the slope because of the sandy bottom. But I think if the court looks at Exhibit A to the Rivers Declaration, which is the architectural drawing, there is no evidence that the shape of the pond changed from the time that it was designed, which is what that picture is from, until the date of the incident. So you might have some shifting sand that kind of makes it difficult to give mathematical precision to what that slope would be. But the liner, there's no evidence that it materially changed such that it would have created a cliff-like drop-off. And Your Honor, I will conclude, and thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Counsel. Counsel for Appellant, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Judge. We're not saying there was a 90-degree change in depth in this case. We're saying that under Henry, there was a concealed danger. which is an exception to recreational immunity, as this court has laid out. That hidden danger, viewing the lights most favorable, viewing the evidence in a light most favorable to the non-moving party, is that a child could take a single step and find herself in a foot deeper water. It's that Ms. Como, right after the incident happened, told police that it starts off shallow, but then very deep, very quickly. The DNR tries to make it seem like the appellant created this drop-off term. We use the term drop-off because it's in all of their records immediately after the incident. And then we use drop-off and they say, well, actually, we walk it back. It's not a drop-off by definition. What we mean is that there was a concealed danger in this pond that should have been warned of. That concealed hidden trap was a change, sudden change in depth that should have been warned of. Did they warn of it? They, you know, respectfully, the signs, counselor for the DNR said that the signs don't show depths. The signs do show depths. They show the pond with the gray areas shaded out, and they show the buoy line. And they say 3 feet, 3 ft, 7 ft around the perimeter area. And one of those 7 foot gray shadowed areas is immediately on the buoy line. So according to this map, they're warning individuals of a shallow end that is completely adjacent to a 7 foot depth, a shallow one that presumably is safe for children, and then immediately on the other side of the line is a 7 foot change, and it goes down to 7 feet.
And are you referring to, for instance, the topographical map that's on a respondent's addendum, page 14? Is that the?
I believe so, Your Honor. Okay. The one that's on the back of the lifeguard stands. So those signs were not proper warning. They weren't reasonable warning. We have a right to ask a jury whether or not those signs were a reasonable warning. And then he says,
and how? Why aren't they reasonable if they show precisely what you just described?
Because it's false information.
Because?
Because they said those depths on the pond were not accurate.
What's false? That it, instead of 7, it was 8?
It just wasn't accurate. They don't know what the depths were of the pond on any given location around the buoy line, so they couldn't say for certain on the sign what the depths were there. Those shaded gray areas and those depths on the sign were admitted by DNR employees not to be correct.
Because there's some fluctuation in the pond.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, presumably.
But where there was a change in grade, whether it went to 7 feet per the sign versus 8 feet per the oral description, the location of the change in grade, are you saying that was inaccurate?
That was also inaccurate, because if it was accurate, what that would mean then is that that depth is 7 feet at the buoy line, because there's a 7 foot marker in a gray area, and that gray area wraps around the perimeter of the pool along with other shades of gray. And if you follow that 7 foot gray area, it hits the buoy line on the south side of the image, on the bottom side of the image. So if that change in depth was actually accurate, it would mean that there was a 7 foot depth at the buoy line, which I think the DNR would probably also deny it. That's why they deny it was true, why it was correct. So the safety signs were not reasonable. And then these buoys, one was there's no rhyme or reason behind the buoy system. One was 3 to 4 feet deep, one was 5 to 8 feet deep. There was no logic behind a buoy. If one is 3 to 4 feet, and an adult walks through it, and then she thinks, or he thinks, that they can walk through the next one because they walked through the first one, well, that's obviously a critical error in the buoy system. It's a flawed buoy system. And then the other warning that they say was the Como talk. Como was the one that gave the safety talk. And in her deposition, she denies that there was a drop-off. How can there be a proper warning for something that the person who gives the safety talk actually deny even exists? Another issue that was raised at the district court was the discretionary immunity issue, but it wasn't raised on oral argument with counselor. So I will not rebut that position. And for those reasons, judges, we request that it's found that Ms. Kirkula has the legal right to ask a jury whether or not there was a hidden danger and whether or not the DNR properly warned of that danger by law. Thank you, judges.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both, counsel, for your excellent briefing and oral arguments. It's always appreciated. I'm sure your clients appreciate that as well. This is a very sad, very tragic case. And we do acknowledge that and realize that. We will be issuing an opinion within the 90-day statutory timeframe on this case. This is the last case for our oral argument, so the court is now in recess. Thank you both.